to safeguard herself. He insists the move is not a vehicle to drive an ANC agenda.
Our decisions in respect of both councillors are consistent with the law and impartial to avoid any accusation of tilting the balance of forces in council to favour a particular political party.
He says all council members will be held accountable and dealt with decisively.
This decision you are taking has got serious ramifications and implications for some of my comrades in the ANC, because if they do the same as these two councillors, we must act consistently in a principled manner and without fear or favor. And in fact, we'll be even more harsh with them. So if you have a doubt that we will deal with anybody because they are in the ANC, just wait and see.
Meanwhile, the DA says it will be taking the MEC to court for political harassment following the suspension of its two councillors. Veronica Mahwadi, Eyewitness News, Midrand.
A second Chinese city has been placed on lockdown as the death toll due to the coronavirus rises to 25. The BBC is reporting that the city of Hongyang has announced it will shut its public transport down due to the outbreak. The city of Wuhan, where the virus started, is on lockdown in an effort to stop the spread of the virus. This comes as millions of people prepare to travel domestically and abroad for the country's Lunar New Year celebrations. Here's China's Health Commission Vice Minister Li Bin.
The virus was being spread mainly through respiratory transmission and is likely to mutate, which will increase the risk of epidemic spreading. In addition, the Spring Festival travel rush saw a mass migration of people, and that has objectively increased the risk of epidemic spreading and the difficulties in taking effective preventative and control measures. We should always be on high alert and never take this lightly.
Gold is trading at $1,553.50 an ounce. The rand is at 14.37 to the dollar, 18.86 to the pound, 15.94 to the euro. Brent crude oil is at $62.29 a barrel.
And in the traffic in Bramley, an accident scene on the M1 South just after Grayston Drive causing heavy delays from Marlborough Drive. There's also an accident scene in Edenville on the N3 North before Modderfontein Road slowing down traffic from Lingsfield Road.
Gauteng's partly cloudy with scattered thundershowers expected. Temperatures have peaked at highs between 29 and 31 degrees. The top story of this hour, Eyewitness News can confirm even more pupils died at the infamous Nyati Bush and River Break Lodge in Brits.
Eyewitness News, in touch, in tune, and independent. For the latest, log on to ewn.co.za or ewn.mobi. Go to 702.co.za now to enter the 2020 Dis-Chem Brain of 702. Sponsored by Dis-Chem, promises to care. Asanya Mosaka
on 702.
702.
For the curious.
It's now 7 minutes past two. We're getting to the second hour of the show. Good to Know with Wendy Nola, consumer feature. Nola knows everything when it comes to these matters. And today's focus is ID fraud, something that is a nightmare, a real nightmare for many South Africans who are going through it, living through it, discovering the news and also just the aftermath of it all, because there's a massive cleanup to be done after that if you are lucky enough to resolve it to a successful conclusion. And also, it's the fear of many other South Africans. You know, how possessive are you with your information? How vigilant are you with your information? And is your level of vigilance enough? Because there are ways that these syndicates work. The reality is that ID fraud is on the increase in South Africa. And so today we've got quite a case study, an incredible case study. We'll also bring you tips and advice from the South African Fraud Prevention Service on how to prevent it. We've got Wendy sitting in Cape Town this afternoon. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Hello, Aza. Good to be with you.
You describe this as a humdinger.
Yes.
So we associate that with Minister Fikile Mbalula, but it definitely applies to this. It's a humdinger of a case
study. It's a humdinger because of what Nell Mutala, who's sitting with you in the studio.
She's in the studio with me. We've been chatting during the news. We'll introduce her in a moment. Yeah.
Lovely, yes. So she's the mum of the fraud victim. They live together in a house in Boksburg.
Yeah.
But it was, she actually sent us, our producer Jonathan, an email about this experience she had, because Naya is no ordinary mum. She has been in the credit industry for many years, a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
She has an MBA thesis on the National Credit Act, so she knows her way around these sorts of issues, and she decided she was going to take matters into her own hands,
yeah.
And she was going to track down the perpetrator, which she did.
Yeah.
But let's start with the email that she sent us a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. In March 2019, Tapelo, my son, received a call from Jet Stores about an unpaid account. He then explained to the collections agent that he's never opened an account at Jet. I then advised him to do a credit check, and he subsequently discovered that accounts, very good advice here, that's the first thing you do. You do a credit check so you can see who else has been done things on your name. So he discovered that that was the beginning. There was, apart from Jet, there was Brad Lowe's, Markham's, Truworth, and Edgar's.
Yeah.
Altogether, the debt in his name was just under 50,000, 48,000.
Yeah.
The biggest hit was Brad Lowe's, 38,000 rands worth of furniture, which the imposter, I'll call him, had delivered to an address in Pretoria. And Naya continues, as his mother and with 20 years credit management experience, I then asked him to request the application forms from the credit providers, in particular the largest one, Brad Lowe's.
Sure.
I also advised him to open a police case, which he did at Littleton Police Station. And so what actually happened was someone had pasted their photograph on Tapelo's ID. A Shoshangove address was used. She says, we live in Boxford, and the face on the ID had no resemblance to Tapelo. My son, however, worked in Centurion and had colleagues that live in Shoshanguve. And this is where I hope we can bring Noah in.
Absolutely. She
did is very satisfying, how she tracked this chap down. Oh,
absolutely. Now you turned into, I can't even think of like great detectives. You turned into the sleuth that went and tracked this imposter down. And you jumped into action really, really quickly. You know, you went to an authority that would give you a sense of how deep this runs. And you moved straight to the police.
Yes. So what we get taught in credit management is risk management, having an eye for detail. And the first thing that I did was to actually take that picture, in actual fact, that copy of the ID, and I just removed my son's ID number and name, and I pasted it all over. It was on Instagram. It was on Facebook.
You used social media?
Yes.
And what did you say?
And then I posted it on Twitter and I said, this is a fraudster that lives in Pretoria and he goes around opening accounts in other people's names.
Mm.
And two people came back to me on Twitter.
Amazing.
And one said to me, I know him, we actually go to church together, and his dad is a senior in the church. And then I realized, oh my goodness, we've got devils walking around us.
I just love that social media was such a useful tool in this case.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, clever.
And yeah, it also sounds like quite an amateur job that you just take your photo and then put it over the copy of somebody, or over somebody's ID, make a copy of that. And these are the sort of things that should raise suspicion.
Yeah.
It should raise suspicion that this does not look like the real deal. Can you please, along with your copy, can we see the real thing? But that's not what happened. He was allowed to obviously carry on and do what he did. So what did you do then with this information that you got from Twitter?
But remember, fraudsters are not cold callers. They're not call center agents. So they would have somebody internally that they worked with. But be that as it may, I took the ID. When I got the information, I traced. I said to the guy, here's my number.
Mm.
Get him to call me. The perpetrator actually called me. Unfortunately, I didn't
reach. What guy? You said to his father? Or no. To the person on Twitter?
The person on Twitter.
Okay, so okay. Go ahead.
So let's call him Tabo, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, Tabo, give him my number and let him call me.
Yeah.
This guy called me. Unfortunately, I didn't record the call, but I listened. And he told me, he said, yes, I got the details from your son's colleague in HR. He works in HR.
Mm.
And he says, but we've been doing this for years, to the tune of millions. We're used to doing this.
You see, HR's got all the details any fraudster needs to impersonate someone. Mm.
Mm. Mm.
And I said to him, okay, that's fine. Can we meet? And we arranged a meeting, but he didn't pitch at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized he didn't come to meet with me, but the case had already been opened because one of the first things that I said to my son was that open a case so that you can get a case number and do an affidavit and give it to the credit providers so that they can write off the debt.
Right.
Mm. When I realized that the investigating officer was slacking, I then took everything and I wrote an email to the provincial commissioner and I went myself to the Littleton police station to meet with the station commander. Mm. And I said, I want this investigator changed and I want a new investigator on the case. Mm-hmm. And that helped because then the new investigator was very quick.
Why was the other one not acting?
I don't know. At some point, he didn't have a car. Mm-hmm. You know, he was traveling from Tembisa and we had to wait for him at the station for about 2 hours before he could come. And it was just one excuse after the other.
Right.
But just to be succinct, I went to the church and I said to the church members, I've got this guy that apparently comes to church here. And they went and looked at their records and they found the actual guy's ID. He was born in 1983. He also lives in Soshanguve. They know the dad. And they said to me, okay, the best thing we can do, we can give you his address, his details, his father's details, and the mother's details. Mm. So I took that and I went to the police. And I said, here's the address. And they went and arrested him.
Where's the round of applause? We need like a standing ovation.
See why I love this case.
Oh my goodness. No, this is so rich. I love how determined you are. So they then went and arrested him.
Yeah.
We'll come back to the case in a moment. But before that arrest, you had had that conversation on the phone, right?
Yes.
Just, you, I feel like you are denying us some of the juice out of this. A deeper understanding of how these syndicates work. So he admitted to you where he got your son's details from.
Yes.
Just take me through that chain. So he got them from HR.
So he says to me, there's a go-betweener that got the documents from HR. Okay, so the HR guy gave the original payslip because he can reprint those original payslips over and over again. So he had the original payslip and the copy of the ID. They didn't have the original ID because the ID was at home.
It is still
the old ID book. Mm. The ID was at home. Then they went and doctored a bank statement. Now, if you look at the bank statement has the correct salary, but it's got the incorrect salary dates, and all the transactions are in Pretoria. Who in their lives goes from Boksburg to buy furniture and clothes in Pretoria?
That should raise alarms, yeah.
That's the first
thing. Inconsistencies,
But also, when the credit provider did the checks, the first thing that you do, when you do a credit check, because he's already employed and he's got a bank account, on the credit report, there'll always be the original address and telephone number. Mm. And whoever that clerk was or salesperson was at Bradlaugh's never looked at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I sent a copy to Wendy of the credit report. The correct cell phone number is there, the address is there, and even the ID, if you look at the back of your original ID, it's got your home address at the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so there are so many things that you can do to check.
That are just not done.
Yeah.
So the go-between, so the HR person sells the information to the go-between,
yeah,
who then gives it to this guy, the churchgoer's son, right? And then he went and did these purchases.
So he goes and does these purchases. And the nice thing, he says to me, oh, so when it's a woman, if it's a lady whose details we've got, we go and get somebody else, a woman, and we just pay her 500 rand to go and be an imposter of this ID, and then we move forward.
A mule, Wendy. Remember, this has come up before.
Yes. It's when the fraudsters need someone to open a bank account for them, because people always say, "Why are they with Speaker and how do they do it?" Well, because they use a mule.
Mm.
And in fact, The Marnie van Schalkwyk will talk about that. He issued a release recently saying that those people are actually committing an offence. And so then the mule gets his $500. The fraudster cleans out their new account and moves on and finds another mule for the next big fraud.
Right. So that's already present, whether it's opening an account or, getting a lease for property. There's already that element that we need to understand more on. So let's come back to the story. So this is how they work. There are these different individuals. The purchase is made. Do they make their money out of selling these items? For instance, the 38,000 rand furniture that was purchased from Bradlow's.
Yeah. So what they do is, first of all, they provide the incorrect address. Mm-hmm. Then they will meet the truck somewhere because they will know that the truck will leave the store at about 12:30, and 15 minutes later they meet the truck and they say to the truck driver, oh, you're going to my address, number 152, wherever. Oh, it's me. I've got a baki. Just load them onto my baki.
Right, so you never get to the destination.
They never get to the destination. Mm-hmm. Okay, then they take the goods and they'll either resell them and keep some of the items themselves. Mm. They make their money out of selling them because these people are not employed. This is their full-time job.
Okay.
And they've got lifestyles like you cannot believe. I mean, the cars that they drive.
That's what I was going to say. Won't you share what he said to you about the Toyota?
Oh, so he actually said that to the investigating officer that just before he was arrested, they were about to buy a Toyota Yaris, using my son's identity at a Toyota dealership because they've got somebody there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this network within different businesses.
Yes.
So we know from the HR perspective, right, this is how they get access to your documents.
Yeah.
But then, as you said, this isn't a cold call. You don't approach a counter with someone you don't know to carry out this fraud. You work with someone who's in it with you.
True.
Sure. So are you saying that there's someone, as you say, at Toyota? Are you saying that there's someone at these retailers as well?
Yeah.
Where they were able to open these credit accounts?
He actually said it, that we have our people in all these stores.
And the retailers are resistant to that suggestion or allegation. What would you say to that?
So remember what he said to me also, Wendy, was that they know that the retailers take insurance for the debt.
Hmm.
And then they subsequently write the debt off.
Yeah.
But my philosophy about this is that this has a domino effect. Because what happens is you get an ID theft that results in fraud. 30 days later, a debit order gets declined or returned because the person says, no, that's not my account.
Right.
60 days later, it becomes a potential bad debt write-off.
Mm.
Okay. The economy is bad right now. If you have a high bad debt book that you cannot collect, you can't keep paying salaries. What do? You retrench.
Mm.
Okay. So it's got a domino effect on the economy. And this is what the retailers don't realize. And from an investigative perspective, the question that I raised was, why don't you get the employees arrested?
Right.
And they say, no, they take them through a disciplinary hearing and they just get dismissed.
Is that all?
Yeah. Remember when some years ago, there used to be a register called RAIDS, Register for Employees Dismissed.
Dismissed, yeah.
If that register was still available,
mm-hmm.
you would have those blacklisted on that register.
The reason.
And they would not even be able
to recycle them.
Yes, because all they do is just keep recycling them.
The next thing.
Yes.
Absolutely. So then it's incumbent on the victim to then institute criminal charges, go to the police and see through justice with the criminal justice system. But the retailers certainly do have a greater role to play. It's quite scary what you're saying now. But another question that I had looking at this is the response of the police. What is the update as far as that's concerned? Because they removed the first investigating officer because of their inaction. What did you do about that?
You know, I was actually happy with the second investigator. I must be honest, I must give him credit for that.
You contacted someone really high in the SAPS to say, listen here.
Not good enough.
No, not good enough.
So he obviously arrested this one. And then he went and arrested the go-betweener as well.
Right.
So that's accused number two. And both of them are now in court and are out on bail. But, I mean, without going into too much detail, they've submitted and pointing fingers at each other. But it's just a strategy to delay the case and try and say there's no case here, because the one says, you know, I got the documents from this one, and this one says, no, but I gave you my ID. You said you needed it to buy furniture. You know?
Yes. So they appeared in court as recently as Tuesday. Were you in court now for that?
Yes,
one?
I was. And the one's attorney wasn't present. And it's been postponed again for the 27th. But I will go to every single court appearance, because I'm not paying any attorney to appear in court. They are.
Right.
At some point in time, they will also run out of money, you know.
Tell you how much money they make, that they can afford
precisely.
These attorneys, each of
They've
them.
Even got prosecutors, because to appear in court, you have to have a prosecutor. The other one has a counsel.
Wow. I think that's the part that when you talked about the lifestyles, now we get a sense of their lifestyle. What's happened with the HR guy at your son's employment?
He's still there, because these guys don't want to reveal his name and they don't want to put it in writing. Because what happened is the perpetrator requested a mediation process and wanted to settle out of court. And I said, that's not happening until we have a sworn written affidavit giving details of where and who gave you these documents.
The internal processes can't help with this at all? Your son's employer's internal processes?
They said, because I contacted, my son actually apparently spoke to his MD, and he also said no, unless the police come and lay a charge or arrest the this guy, they will not do anything about it.
So there's no way of identifying who it is within HR. That is doing this, and they might choose to leave, go into another organization and do this. Did they say whether or not this has happened with the same HR person previously?
Yeah, they say no, he's been doing it for a while.
Wow. Oh, gosh, the protection that goes on.
And for all the wrongdoings, Sitsiro has tweeted saying, I applaud Osneo. I would have been so scared to go further because of guababa, as in just because of fear, you know. And I think there is something to be admired about how you fearlessly took on this particular case. You drove it. You didn't just open a case at Littleton Police Station and sort of leave it there.
That's You've where driven. Most cases would leave,
exactly.
would be left.
Yeah. You gave the police almost a complete, here's the docket, just
present.
Act.
I drove to Soshanguve. I even threatened the police and I said to them, I've got the address. You either get hold of him before I do.
Right.
Because if I do, then all hell will break loose. I think I would actually end up in jail myself. But you have to actually push this, because remember, this impacts your credit worthiness also as an individual. When you apply, I mean, he's a youngster. If he applies for a job, employees do so much background screening on you than they do on fraudsters, actually.
So he hadn't been blacklisted yet, right?
They had blacklisted him already.
He had been.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've got an update on that. I got a response from the JD Group to which Brad Lowe's belongs. Obviously, I asked them a whole lot of questions, so that comes out in that. But I was interested, if we got a couple of minutes before the news, I asked Nao what she had learned through this experience and what she feels should be happening with the credit granters, credit providers, and what isn't happening. So if you could just run through that a bit, I think it's really important there.
Okay, firstly, what I feel should happen is that the credit providers need to rotate their staff. Okay, they need to have systems also that compare the facial recognition to Home Affairs.
Right.
Thirdly, they need to employ young auditors that are just coming out of varsity, because they've got an eye to detail. They must employ those youngsters that will do the credit assessment at the shops. There's also what they call family identification, where you can actually do screening calls. I mean, security questions, sorry.
Yeah.
Security questions means Azania's grandmother's maiden name, Azania's primary school. Those
right.
are security questions that they should ask.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot that they can actually look at. But the Home Affairs identification, rotation of staff, employing young auditors, that would actually help.
I hear you about the rotation of staff, because right through this conversation, Wendy, I'm sure you agree that you've also been thinking about how do we change the system? How do we better protect and make sure that these loopholes are closed? Because what the fraudsters are actually doing is exploiting these loopholes,
They create their networks with impunity, it would seem.
Precisely. So how do we close those?
Yeah, exactly. And I think even I wasn't aware of this, that you could have, that the retailers, and it makes a lot of sense, can have a link to Home Affairs where you get an ID and you can then call up the original and see if the photos match. How easy is that? I mean, that seems to me, we have the technology. There shouldn't be an excuse for fake IDs. Why is it still happening?
As long as they know.
I'm going to ask Marnie van Schalkwyk that in a little bit.
Because the protection of personal information, I wonder what the restrictions may be within the law that might prevent that, because so many of us regard what we've given or what resides with Home Affairs as really personal information that we wouldn't want just anybody having access to.
When you're applying for credit, you have to give up a lot of personal information.
If you say you are,
you have to give them a lot, because they need to know who you are and where to find you if you don't pay and all the rest. So,
and as Noah said, they seem to be more thorough with doing. They're not being thorough with the fraudsters, you know, which is what we actually need to see more of. It is just unbelievable. This problem is on a mammoth scale in South Africa. Do open the lines at any single time and talk about ID fraud, you'll be inundated with people who have scary experiences. Names have been ruined, blacklisted, credit records, employment opportunities have been suffocated as a result of that. There's just so many limitations that it brings about to that individual's life. And a recovery to overturn that, to correct that, is just an endless task. And some people, this ends up revisiting their lives over
years
and over
later.
Again. Because maybe there's some creditor who hasn't cleaned up the record, or you name it. And so it is a painful thing to undergo. We're going to continue our conversation with Wendy Nola and Neo Mutala. Neo is one of our listeners, really an incredible woman for what she has done, achieved to do, in fact, for her loved one, her son in this case, whose identity had been stolen. Someone, an imposter, had impersonated him and run up an almost 50,000 rand debt. And there are worse stories out there, even greater debt. So what can we learn out of it? What have you learned, especially if you've been a victim of ID fraud? We take your calls on 011-883-0702 and 31702 for your SMSs. Your WhatsApps and your voice notes on 072-702-1702. And just a reminder, we are also going to bring you comment from the South African Fraud Prevention Service. They've got tips, they've got the stats and advice on how we can prevent ID fraud.
No, live, transform. This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
Well, Oliver Dixon has tweeted to say that Noah is so lucky to have had such forthcoming fraudsters. I was actually congratulating her off air. And what was your answer, Noah?
Streetwise. You just have to be streetwise.
Being streetwise.
That was one of the questions I wanted to ask. Do you think it was the fact that you approached him in the context of his people, his family, the church, his friends? So given all of that, he
will be shamed.
Of course, he's now denying it. But do you think that was part of the reason why he just spilled the beans to you and told you so much now?
Yes, and I think also because I said to him, you know, I know your wife is a teacher at a school, so I'm going to print 10,000 copies.
Okay, that might have done it.
I'll take 10,000 copies and tell everybody that you're a fraudster, your mother runs an NGO, and I'm going to get the funder to stop funding your mother. And I think he just realized that hell hath no fury like this woman that is scorned. But
son is scorned.
I just love it. You were just a woman who was out for justice, you know, and you're going to make sure that your son gets this justice come hell or high water right now.
Exactly. I've covered so many of these cases, and it always stops with, you know, the guy got caught, and then I get involved, and I...
Yeah.
because the company's not responding, and then I get the name cleared and the debt written off and the adverse listing removed, and that's quite satisfying. But I've never come across a case where the victim or the victim's mom has actually gone and said, no, got this photo, yes. No problem, I'm going to find this person, and you know what, I'm going to get him arrested. I mean, it's just delicious.
Absolutely really brave. Is. Thanks, Oliver. That's actually our colleague here on 702. Let's go to the lines now. We also have Manny van Schalkwyk, the Executive Director of Fraud SA Fraud and Prevention Services. Manny, thank you so much for joining us. And I want you to be a part of this, the rest of the segment, because we have so many listeners as well who have called to share their experiences. Good afternoon.
Hello, Azania. Hello, Wendy.
So, what are the stats currently? We believe that this is on the increase. What is the pattern? What do we know?
We do see an increase. To give you just a little bit of statistics of new, letting this position where what we are and who we are, is that we're a non-profit organization which was started about 20 years ago by the banks and the retailers, and they needed a platform to share confirmed fraud, not suspected fraud, but confirmed fraud information, and how it will effectively work is that you have landed up on this database. You will apply for credit. The credit provider will go to the credit bureau and check if you can pay the credit. And then they will come to us to see if there's a listing on a confirmed fraud case. Mm. And then based on all that information, we'll decide if they will grant credit or not. So that is one part of the business. And the second part of the business is that we provide to consumers a free service if they are a victim of identity fraud, that they can get listed on this database. And also, when you lost your handbag or your ID was in there, so you're not a victim as yet, but you can get a protective registration. Mm. So to prevent you from becoming a victim. So that is just in a summary what we do in the three databases that we run, being the fraud database, the victim database, and the protective registration database.
Right.
So just in terms of the statistics, yes, we do see an increase. And I come up with the facts when new frauds listed in 2019 increased by 7% compared to the previous year. Our protective registrations, that increased significantly by more than 20%, where people are really scared that they will become victims, mm-hmm. and they may take proactive measures to prevent from becoming victims of fraud. Just in terms of savings, because, you know, and I interrupted you as well, but the credit providers give us an idea of the savings that they saved. If they would have taken this credit on, this would have been a bad debt, and now they're rejecting it. And that is standing just over 2 billion rand for last year. I think that's a conservative figure. I think we can look at double that.
Right, that's absolutely staggering. We go to the lines now, and we've got Jason calling from Houghton. Hi, Jason. You've got an ID fraud story.
Hi, Aza. Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
Hello.
Listen, the first thing is that someone needs to make you three ladies in studio today into superwomen, like a real life superwoman, because this is just amazing. Someone has managed to stop these people.
We're just the storytellers. It's Neo who's
exactly.
The superwoman.
Thank you.
So I've also got quite an interesting story. It was last year sometime, I went and applied for car finance. I wasn't really looking for a car, but I just wanted to gauge, since I was new in the job market, if I'd be able to afford a new car. Mm. A few weeks later, I got a very strange phone call at my work, and it was a lady at the Vodacom store, a sales consultant. Mm. And what actually happened is someone did the same thing. They had my payslip, my bank statements, my ID, they had absolutely everything. Went into the store, tried to make application for a new contract. Thank goodness this sales consultant was so on top of her game. She realized that, look, this the name is obviously a European sort of name, and the picture is an African person. And it didn't cheat to her. She didn't feel like it matched up. So before she actually submitted the document, She actually pretended to tell this customer, this fraudster, that she had submitted it, it was approved, and they'll contact her when they get the phone in stock.
Yeah.
So she sort of saw ahead. She Googled my employer, managed to get hold of me, and actually stopped this person in their tracks.
Mm.
So a few days later, called the gentleman in, said, look, your phone's ready. At that stage, the police had already been informed and managed to stop this person in their tracks. So thank goodness for that sales consultant being so on top of her game.
Absolutely.
Really very good to hear.
That, you know, it's really good to hear that there are some good people out there, and we just need more people to stand up to things like this.
Mm.
And I know that it's so deep-seated and deep-rooted. I mean, these people have connections everywhere, but it's up to us as you know, forget state capture. It's up to us as the small guys on the street to actually take a stand, and we need to actually stand up and be the role models to people out there.
Absolutely. And that,
we stand together, we can stop all of this stuff from happening.
And that Vodacom staff member is doing exactly what Noah was saying needs to happen. You know, pay closer attention to the other details provided. Yeah. Be thorough.
And the thing is that, you know, as she was saying, is that there are so many implications to this. I mean, people are so, these environments are so sales-driven and target-driven that people will do anything to just make that
That's
sale.
That's a very good point. Yeah, true.
Deep cost, you know.
Yeah.
So it's important that that these sort of working environments, despite having such high pressure environments, actually need to still maintain, because at the end of the day, it's their company's reputation that's at stake.
Absolutely, Jason. Wonderful call, and I'm glad that the fraud was averted in your case. Really, congratulations.
And the perpetrator caught.
Precisely. Let's quickly get this one from Greg as well. Greg, you also have an ID fraud story.
Yes, greetings all.
Hi.
Hi, Greg.
I'm going to try and articulate this as quickly and as painlessly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually something that happened to my brother. Many years ago in the 80s and prior, we used to be conscripted into national service.
Mm.
And a fellow that he shared a tent with, at the time, round about 1988, he lost his ID book. An old green ID book.
Yeah.
And not having thought much of it, you finish your national service and you went into the employment world. And about 10 years later, this surfaced. If I recall correctly, he went to get a cell phone from Vodacom. And through there, they picked up there was a credit issue.
Hmm.
And this credit issue then evolved. On further inspection, it turned out he had an entire family that had Edgar's credit cards, clothing accounts, cell phones, and this just went on and on and on. And he asked for the information, and it was his name, his ID number, and this guy that he hadn't seen for 10 years that shared a sleeping bag or was in a sleeping bag next to him in the military.
His photo.
Let's get to the end of the story. So, untold stress, frustration, you can imagine. This went on for years, court cases, whatever it was. And it so turned out that this fella took it a step further. You know, my late dad used to say, a liar becomes a thief, and a thief becomes a murderer.
Oh, my God.
This particular gentleman used that ID to get himself employment, and somehow through the security, he was employed in security, he then disappeared with the company's payroll.
What?
So it just went on and on and got worse. And the end of the story is that this was taken through the judicial process. And you can imagine the costs that are involved.
Mm.
And these guys that steal your ID, they might as well dive you or pile dive you head first into a quagmire because you're buried in mud.
Yeah.
So it took my brother
a lifetime.
I'm talking months to a year plus, just to get through the process to try and clear his name. And this particular gentleman was taken to the judicial system and was given a suspended sentence.
Oh, great.
So you tell me, my question is two things, or perhaps what should happen in normal commercial law is that whoever the credit provider is, should also take responsibility for giving the decision to say, let's allow the credit. And surely there may also be an opportunity for the insurance companies to insure against things like this.
Greg, that's such an interesting proposal.
I'll keep that open-ended and you guys run with it. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Greg in Eden Vale. What a way to leave it on and saying if there is punishment for the credit companies, then they're likely to act more responsibly and take more measures to make sure, greater measures, to make sure that they're dealing with the correct individual. Let's take a break. And when we come back, Manny's got tips and advice on how you can prevent ID fraud.
We're listening to you. Go to 702.co.za.
Letlokhonola has tweeted us saying the ID fraud issue is sickening. My brother was left with 800,000 rand debt on a Ford Ranger bought on his name in series, yet he lives in Groblersdal in Limpopo. This was caught transit into Mozambique in August 2019, and it's now his baby to clear from his name. So the car has gone across the border. Manny, we've heard some really harrowing stories of ID fraud. What are some of the things that we can do to prevent it?
Well, I think everybody needs to understand that the fraudsters want your name, and the reason why they want your name is to go and get open accounts in your name, and they have obviously no intention to repay it. But I think the first thing one needs to do is to get your credit bureau report. You need to understand if there are accounts in your name which you don't have, which is not that you open. And that will give you a very good indication if somebody is out there having your name. But plain tips to prevent it. I would suggest that you need to treat your ID, your identity and your identity documents and personal information like you would treat cash. You would not give it to everybody. You will make sure it's in safe hands. So that is step number one. Do not throw documents away like old bills or old telephone accounts, because that is where people fish for that information and get it and compile a profile in your name. Don't click on links. We get these links to say, click here and we want to update your information. It's not your bank sending that information. It's somebody who's trying to fish for that information. So don't do that. Make sure that you are on secure websites. Be careful of social media where your degree, you just pass the trick and you put your whole matric certificate and with your name and ID number on the social
Too
media.
Too many people do that.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. People just grab that information and they build profiles, So I think one should be careful of that. The moment you start getting telephone calls from debt collectors of accounts that you have not opened, don't just laugh it off and ignore it. Because people think, oh gosh, the people are so stupid, they're trying to get an Edgar's account for me and I don't even have an Edgar's account. Is that somebody has opened, most probably, an Edgar's account in your name.
Yeah.
You need to go and find out about it. Because remember, we as consumers, when we become a victim of fraud, the credit provider is also the victim of fraud.
Yeah.
They are not going to get paid in this process. So we've got two victims here, and between the two victims, they need to work together to solve the problem. It's very important not to ignore those very important calls.
Right. Now, you also had a thought around what we can do, which is touching on this point about credit providers and staying on top of your record.
Yes. But also the credit bureaus have SMS alert systems, packages that consumers can buy. So every time there's an activity on your account, on your name, then they send you an SMS and then you can see who did the inquiry, what the person's name is, and you can just immediately phone them to say, I haven't applied for this. I'm not the one that's standing in front of you. It's very simple.
Let's wrap up with the call from Nito. Nito, hi.
Hi, Vanya.
Good, thank you.
I mean, this happened on Monday.
Yeah.
I took my car into a service. I got there at 10:10 in the morning, and they only open up at 7 o'clock. So the security guards came and put on our information pack, service pack on the windscreen. So I took the service pack and I read through it. So the back of the paper, I realized there's information on the back of the paper. So they obviously the recycling paper. And then here I find this lady's name, surname, ID number, the deal that she wanted.
The wow, that is shocking. I'd love to know which dealership that was, if you could tell me off air.
Then I called her. I actually called her and said to her, ma'am, this is me, Neto Smith. I got your details, and here's it. I'm calling you to take it up with the dealership, but I'm going to send you an email. Well, I'm going to take a picture of it. I'm going to send you an email, and I'm going to copy the dealer principal. I'm going to copy the company and everything, and I send it to them. I said, guys, here's what I sent to the lady. This is what happened. Here's your information.
Can you believe
it? So whatever can happen, because I've been a victim of identity theft. My ID is registered with the SAFPS. It's registered because I've been a victim of it. Now this lady's sitting at home. I have a whole document, a full address, cell phone number.
Imagine.
That's where the SIM swap comes in now, and the WhatsApp messages and all that. So she was just exposed. And I called and I said to her,
"Job well done,
I sent it to the dealer principal, and he said to me, please, can you send me proof that you've deleted the pictures? How am I going to do that? Please think
about it." Oh, now it's your problem.
Neto, job well done. Thank you so much. We are out of time.
Are we? Because I wanted to just quickly talk about what I had to give the JD Group the right of response. What did they say about Tabela's case?
Yeah.
They said it's a big problem for us. We don't have a mandate on this particular consumer on file. We can't respond. Bit of a cop out that. Ms. Motala has confirmed that the consumer's information was breached at the consumer's place of employment, her son's employer, an external party that we do not have any control or association with. She said about this person that did the credit application, we do not have any evidence linking our employee to this act of fraud to support any further action. We can't share our fraud preventative practices in the public domain because we would expose our business to further syndicate activities. And then if should you or your consumers have any further information about fraudulent activities pertaining to our business or our employees, please not hesitate to furnish us with the information, and then gives the crime call line. Perhaps we can put that on our blog. But please take note, we do take fraud very seriously, as we are an active member and board member of the South African Fraud Prevention Service. So not too much to come out of that, but saying, you know, it wasn't our fault that this person's information was used.
External.
But yes, and our person wasn't to blame for any wrongdoing. And there we have it.
Yes. So, Wendy, job well done. Manny, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm sure we'll continue to speak, especially in this segment. Thank you, Manny.
Thank you so much.
And the website details, Manny, quickly?
Great. If I can just tell consumers what to do if they want to protect their IDs, is they can just SMS the word protect ID, one word, to the number 43366, 43366. And we will contact them. We'll make contact and we'll take them through a process.
Thank you.
On how to protect their IDs.
Thank you so much. That's Manny van Schalkwyk, the Executive Director for SA Fraud and Prevention Services. And then bold, courageous Neo, Hero of the Week. Thank you. Your son must be greatly relieved. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for having me, Neo. Thank you, Wendy.